You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Denise Lee and Stefan Andrew Sishin are professional musicians who are blind and they're a married couple. They went viral after appearing on Britain's Got Talent and are here today to tell us about their work, how they met and reaching the semi-final of the show. Thanks so much for joining us, Denise and Stefan.
Hi, you all right?
So can you tell us how you met?
Well, we were both involved with an awards ceremony which was being hosted by the RNIB, and I was actually hosting rather than just handing out an award that particular night. It was in January 2006, and I'd arrived into Euston tired and just travel worn, and I wanted to go and get some lunch. So I got onto the underground, and there was a man sitting opposite me on the underground, and it was quite a crowded train, and he asked if I had the time, and I was wearing a tactile watch, and I clicked the screen up on the watch to give him the time, and he must have heard it, and he said something like, oh, I had one of those, and I went swimming in it and I ruined it, and I just thought he was hitting on me. So I just went, oh really, because I didn't believe him. And then when he got to his stop, he stood up and flicked his long cane out. And I thought, oh, he is blind. Right. He wasn't hitting on you. Oh, God, I feel awful now. And then when I arrived in the evening at the event, the pianist was the man from the train, which was weird.
Yeah, because my role in this was the cocktail pianist.
That's
so I was
right.
The guy in the corner playing the piano.
Yeah.
And then I did sort of filler music when people came up for awards and that kind of thing. So that was how I sort of fitted into it.
And we were doing a couple of pieces together, and I went over to take my scores to the pianist and realised that it was the blind guy from the train. And I thought, right, OK, I probably shouldn't tell him that I'm the woman that was a bit rude to him on the train. Anyway, I did tell him a couple of weeks later. It went really, really well. The awards ceremony went brilliantly. He wasn't even meant to be involved in it. He'd stood in pretty much last minute because somebody had double booked themselves.
Good job, really.
And by the end of the evening, we went for a drink, sort of talked about the show, talked about our backgrounds. And then he said, should we work together a bit more regularly? And next thing I knew, we'd moved up to Manchester from London so that we could be closer together and work together more consistently. And yeah, some might use that as a red flag. But
for the record, I had family in Manchester.
Yeah, it
anyway,
wasn't just stalking.
So, yeah, it wasn't just some random. She married me because she couldn't afford my fee.
There's something in that. I work a lot with orchestras as well, and with chamber orchestras too. But yeah, as an accompanist, as a pianist, when I need a piano accompanist, then yeah, it was always Stefan after that, more or less.
And how do you balance the professional side of kind of working together to, you know, make a living, and also your personal relationship?
The lines are quite blurred, in as much as if either of us have an idea for something or have a brainwave about something that may need doing with a piece that we're learning, then we'll just drop it into the conversation, or we'll make reference to it at any point during the day.
Yeah, I think the record is Steph asked me a question once and I kind of shelved it in the back of my head and answered it without even breaking stride 18 hours later.
The scary bit was I actually knew what she was talking about as well. But yeah, we manage it quite well. Often you sing when you're drying your hair. And if I'm in the office, I've got a little MIDI keyboard that I've got attached to the computer for sort of audio production stuff. So I'll potentially vamp along as well. It's random and it's amazing. And there are very few occasions where we actually say, right, we need to sit down and we need to do some proper work, unless there's something major coming up. But we'll just kind of work ad hoc. And that's lovely.
Rehearsals are quite fluid and organic, but it does seem to work for us. I like to work in the evening. I always feel vocally more able.
Maybe it taps into the psyche of being an evening-based performer, because,
yeah,
you know, most of the work we do is in the evening.
So. Yeah, but we do rehearse a lot in the evenings. We've got really good neighbours.
Very tolerant.
And on the show, you mentioned recovering from cancer and facing the challenges of the COVID-19 pandemic as professional musicians, spurring you on to audition. Can you tell us more about that?
I just hadn't anticipated how devastating cancer treatment. So I had surgery, which was fine. And then I had 7 months of chemo, which was not fine, because the chemo was fine, didn't affect my voice at all. But one of the side effects that it caused was acid reflux, which is devastating to a voice. So I'm still putting everything back together. And then straight on the back of that, I had 20 rounds of radiotherapy, which again, shouldn't be damaging, but it's very, it dries everything out. And I had it all up around my collarbone. So the best they can say to you at the time is, we will try. And that seems like a fair payoff. You know, when they're curing cancer, you think, well, okay, that's as much as I can ask, really. I've had a camera down and made sure that everything's undamaged. It's all fine. It's just, you know, recuperation and rebuilding after both those treatments combined. I think because post-COVID, because hospitals were still under COVID restrictions, even though they'd been lifted by the government, you know, so people were allowed to travel with no masks and stuff like that. But I was still having to self-isolate because of having PCR tests ahead of every chemo round that I had. So although physically I was fit to sing, I couldn't actually travel on public transport to get to a gig because of, you know, because of having to self-isolate. So I was watching everybody else's diaries fill up again, and ours weren't able to. So we lost a lot of ground. Also, I think there's something about being told that, because I said to my consultant, you know, if I have treatment, what will happen? And then the ultimate question was, if I don't have treatment, what will happen? And his answer was, you probably won't see 2 years. And my little boy was 8 at the time. All I could think was, if I don't have this treatment, I won't be around when he starts at high school. And of course I was going to have treatment. It was my job to get better. You know, I had to throw everything at it that I could. But I think there's something like about a diagnosis like that, which makes you want to just be reckless and take the bull by the horns and do things that you wouldn't usually do. And so when the opportunity arose for us to do Britain's Got Talent, I just thought, well, first of all, I thought, no, I'm not doing that, because at the time I had whooping cough. And then once I was recovered from that, I thought, do you know what? Shall we do it? Shall we? It might be a laugh. And it has been. It's been great fun. It's been really life-affirming, actually. It's been wonderful to be treated like colleagues by the music producers on the competition. They've really treated us with respect and consideration, and they've worked with us rather than against us, you know. Steph's been able to make our own backing tracks and devise his own piano parts. We've been able to choose our own repertoire within reason. We're going to record the piece we were meant to do for the final and live stream it, or we're going to record it and put it out there somehow, because we worked really hard on it, and we would like to be able to get the chance to sing it. The judges decided to override the public vote and to strategically remove us from the final, which is fine. They were putting together a variety show. They already had 2 singers. Wouldn't have been very balanced if they'd had another singer, and they put through a comedian and a magician instead, which obviously provides more variety for the final.
And your first appearance got so much attention online and in the media. You went on some talk shows and people were really, really blown away by not only your musical talent, but also your humour.
They loved the fact that I call my boobs Thelma and Louise.
I think using the reality TV tropes, I think they expected it to be this kind of kicker, like the happy story at the end of a news bulletin. You know, that we were the cute blind couple who, you know, people went aw for. I don't think the producers or us, especially us, expected it to go as absolutely crazy as it did.
And the response was massive. We turned our phones off while we watched the episode where our first audition went out, and when we turned them back on, they literally blew up. It took about 2.5 hours for the bottleneck on my phone to ease so that I could read any of them, because VoiceOver just had a meltdown. And yeah, we couldn't read anything, and it took us days to respond to everything. We went on this morning, the next day. So we travelled down. I mean, it was mad. We were on the train travelling down to London. People were taking our pictures on the train. We did selfies with people as we were on the railway station. It was lovely. It is and still is lovely.
Quite addictive.
Yes.
All jokes aside, I think it would probably get really tedious if you were really desperate for the loo, or you were rushing for your train and people were stopping you. But for that short amount of time, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and we've had a great response since we weren't put through to the final either. You know, we've had...
There's been a lot of indignation on our behalf, which is quite funny.
Yeah, it's been fun to be part of the most controversial moment of Britain's Got Talent in 2024.
Well, it's weird. Indignation seems to have followed us around through the competition, because, of course, when our first audition aired, it was the episode where the guy who was messing with his hair got the golden buzzer and we didn't. And, of course, we knew that we'd got through to the semi-finals in March.
Couldn't tell anyone. No. You're not allowed to tell anyone.
So everyone was getting really angry because we hadn't got the golden buzzer and, you know, we may not go through. And that was this sort of overarching criticism of the episode. And then, of course, when we got removed, the way in which we were voted out was very obvious and has kind of meant people have backed us even more than they already had. Which is a really lovely thing that, you know, people sort of have our backs and believe that we should have got through even if we didn't. The takeaway, I think, is basically they got probably more than what they wanted to get out of us, because they didn't expect it to go as big as it did. And we went on there to have a bit of a laugh and to grow our reach and get an audience maybe that hadn't come across us before, and we've done that with Bells On. So if you're looking at it philosophically, everybody's a winner.
What are you hoping people take away from seeing you on the show?
I remember saying in an interview that it was very touching that Bruno reacted in the way he did by crying in our first audition. But I really hope that he cried because the music that we were performing touched him, not because of our visual impairment, not because it was a blind couple of musicians.
Yeah, because we've always struggled very hard to be musicians who are blind, not blind musicians. And it's semantics, but there is a difference. We're not trading on a sob story. We're not letting the fact that we're blind do part of the work for us. One of the nicest things I read, actually, was a comment on one, I think it was on the first audition when Britain's Got Talent put it out on their Facebook feed. And somebody said, I was expecting a sob story, but these two didn't. They talked about cancer. They talked about being blind, but they didn't do it in a way which made you feel that you had to have sympathy for them. Mm. They didn't play on it. And that, if that is so, then I feel like we did a really good job.
I saw something similar, actually. Someone posted last week, the blind couple should have got through. And someone replied to the comment and said, don't you mean Denise and Stefan? And
yes, thought, that person.
Amazing.
Yes,
thank
that
you.
Person.
And do you have any advice for performers who are listening, or people that might be considering applying for a show like Britain's Got Talent?
Do it. If you don't do it, nobody else is going to do it for you. So you've got to do it. I mean, I had a brush with reality TV 21 years ago, which is partly why I didn't think I should be doing Britain's Got Talent, although there are no rules and regulations that say you can't have worked professionally. Mm. It perhaps made me a little more prepared for what happened on the final. And I looked at Steph and he looked so hopeful, and I thought, we're on telly. This is live. This is going out live. This is, and he's crap. He's got no poker face. His poker face is rubbish. And when the other name was announced over hours and we realised we weren't going through, I just buried my face in his chest, and he stood there. And I've read so much online saying the husband looked really unhappy. And I thought, yeah, I was right. He hadn't got his poker face on.
I've not managed to work out whether that was unhappy, sad, or unhappy, really angry, because I was both of those things. And my facial vocabulary having never seen before, is an anathema to me. I don't know.
Yeah, it's in his head, it's on his face.
Yeah.
And to tune in to that upcoming performance that you'll be sharing and listen to your music and learn more about you both, where can people go?
Principally, we look after our own Facebook page. It's Denise and Stefan with an ampersand, purely because that's what BGT had us in the competition as, and it just keeps continuity.
Like Thelma and Louise.
Thelma and Louise, yeah. Wallace and Gromit. So yeah, that's facebook.com/ Denise, and confusedly, that's Denise, DENISEAND, Stefan, STEFAN.
We've got an Instagram.
And a TikTok, but we've got other people looking after those because I have TikTok. No idea how to use either of those things.
My daughter at the moment is posting everything onto Instagram.
Yeah.
And and somebody else is sporadically posting onto TikTok, but I don't know. It's a mystery to me, TikTok.
So yeah, Facebook is the sort of main source of our thing where we're updating ourselves.
There is a website as well. There's a website, www.deniselee.com. Lee is LEIGH. It's very neglected. Don't hold it against me. It just directs people straight to the Facebook page, really, because we are able to maintain that Facebook page ourselves. We're able to put our own music on there. Often it will be filled with rants when record companies can contact me and say that performances we've put up there we've nicked from somewhere else, and then we have to prove to them that we haven't. That happens about 3 times a month.
But you've been about 5 different sopranos, haven't
always
you?
Always really good sopranos though, so it's a right stroking of my ego. I
Well, thank you so much, Denise Lee and Stefan Andrew Sisson, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.